Hey everybody, Scott McNulty here, host of Random Trek. I just wanted to give you a quick message before the start of this episode. For a limited time only, Random Trek shirts are available in three colors: Doomed Red, Science Blue, Command Gold. Go to theincomparable.com/shirt to find out more. Enjoy the episode. Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. Today's non-random guest is Guy English. Guy, thank you for joining me.
I'm thrilled. I think I twisted your arm to be on.
Well, there was
I had to beg.
A little. No begging, but maybe a slight pressure was applied to my arm. Guy, why don't you tell the lovely people a little bit about yourself?
Computer programmer. I don't even know how to describe it. I do a lot of things. I have a podcast called Debug, which you can hear over on iMore, which is pretty popular. I write occasionally at kickingbear.com. My big thing that I do is an app called Napkin, which you can find in the Mac App Store, which helps you concisely annotate images, which is great for if you're having like an iterative design process with a designer that's not on site. And many other things, including, lawyers and instructional images, all kinds of stuff. And besides that, I do a bunch of contracting for a bunch of other people on different apps.
You're a busy man.
Yeah, I've got a lot of irons in the kettle kind of thing.
Well, that's always good. So let's talk about, enough about you and your life, Guy. Nobody wants to hear it anymore. We want to talk about Star Trek. So would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
Very much so. From way back in the day, I used to, up here in Canada, I live in Montreal, the CBC used to play the original Star Trek series, back when it was not the original, it was not TOS, it was just Star Trek, on Sunday mornings, and I would curl up on the couch with my sister and we'd watch it, and we'd see the same episodes over and over and over again. I mean, obviously, there's not that many. There's, 73?
Something like that.
Around there. And I think, the CBC maybe had rights to like six of them. It feels like I saw the same episodes a lot. I've just been a fan ever since. When TNG started, I was babysitting a kid at the time, and I basically just sent him to bed so I could watch TNG on his parents' TV. Because I was so pissed that it had like a conflict scheduling. Oh, like, man. My first serious scheduling conflict of my life was like, oh man, I gotta watch TNG and I've gotta babysit this kid. It's horrible.
But at least you got paid to watch TNG, basically.
That's true. Although I kind of came out of it not feeling great about it.
Oh no. About TNG or babysitting?
About TNG, yeah.
Oh, what, you have conflicted feelings about TNG?
I've come to like it a lot. But originally, especially Encounter at Farpoint, the cast seemed to be recast TOS characters. Mm-hmm. At least they had the same goals. I mean, I don't know if you could say Spock and Data had the same character goal necessarily. But,
well, they're certainly related.
Right. You can clearly see that one riffs off the other, right? Mm-hmm. Putting a Klingon on the bridge was kind of cool, but it felt like a gimmick.
Yeah, and they didn't really use Worf all that well in the first season anyway.
No. Riker and Picard seemed to be like, well, let's take Kirk and like put him through a transporter thing and get two of them out.
Right, split two of them.
Yeah, like the good leader guy and like the handsome swashbuckling guy. Like, if only they could be combined, we could just get more Jim Kirk. Who else? I'm trying to think who else. Everybody else just seemed kind of hackneyed.
Well,
but it was a weak first episode.
It's not the best. I mean, and the first season, the first couple of seasons probably, not the best Star Trek either. Although there are some good episodes sprinkled throughout there. But as we've said many times on this podcast, the first couple of seasons of every series other than the original series is kind of a tough row.
Yeah, TOS kind of does it in the reverse almost.
It does. It's kind of weird. I was watching, obviously for this podcast, I'm watching a lot more original series. Mm-hmm. And it's just so surprising to me how many of the great episodes are in the first season when, the actors are still trying to get used to – it doesn't even feel like they're trying to get used to it, but they have to be just as as people, like, getting used to this stuff, but certainly, like, the TNG, the first season, you can really tell that all the actors are just trying to get used to this mumbo-jumbo that they're speaking, and it's not, they're not super comfortable in the roles. Maybe the uniforms aren't comfortable. I don't know. But there's something that wasn't going right for them season one, but TOS did not have that problem.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, so TOS had nothing to build on except itself, right?
That's true.
So they could sort of reach around and try to figure out what works and what doesn't. Some of my favorite episodes of TOS are not the direction they ended up going in. I loved Balance of Terror.
Mm.
I loved it. I don't know if that was first season. I think so. They introduced the Romulans, and it's basically just a submarine battle, which is great. And you get to see, like, the desperate style action of, you think you're bad at actors' names. Mark. Mark, the guy that went on to play Sarek.
Oh, right. Mark Leonard, is that it?
Mark Leonard. Although now I'm going to get confused because it's Leonard McCoy, and I may just get there may be some brain soup going on. But I think it's Mark Leonard. He's the Romulan commander.
Mm-hmm.
And what I loved about that episode is that they could never communicate ship to ship during that whole show. It was just a dogfight. Well, it was like a battleship, like a submarine battle. They never get him up on the screen and yell at him. Right. Oh, wait, they do. They do briefly because that's the reveal that the Romulans look exactly like Vulcans.
Right. Everyone's like,
yeah.
And then someone accuses Spock of being a spy.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a bunch of that. But that's weird because they don't really seem to call each other up. Because they keep cloaking all the time, right?
Right, exactly. And the Romulans aren't thrilled with... they don't want anyone to know what they look like for whatever reason.
Right.
They're very secretive people.
Yeah. And I'm glad that episode came up because I think we're going to touch on it as we talk about this.
Yes. So why don't we segue into what episode we're going to talk about, which is not, sadly, an original series episode, but it is a Next Generation episode from Season 3. So this is when I feel like, by Season 3, things are firing on all cylinders. And
this is a
good episode.
Great season.
Yes. And this episode, not that I want to spoil it, not a bad episode.
Not a bad episode. So I went back and watched this episode at your behest after we rolled the dice.
Yes. Who watches the Watchers, by the way?
Who watches the Watchers? And I looked around at the other episodes in this season, and I've basically just watched the entire season again. I think I skipped a couple, but I mean, there's so many good episodes in there. Or at least, you know, top percentile, top whatever the...
You got
70 percentile, 80 percentile.
Tin Man, Deja Q...
Yeah.
Kivas Fajo with the most toys, one of my favorite characters.
Yeah. The Hunters, or The Hunted,
mm-hmm.
which is the escapee convict soldier guy, who Kirk is like, I love his, Kirk, Picard is literally like his solution is like, at the end, all of the soldiers are broken out and they're holding the government hostage. And Picard does the anti-Kirk thing. And it's like, well, look, this looks like an internal affair to me. So... I'm outie. See you guys.
See you guys later. Yeah. I'm sure you can figure this out. And of course, the end of season 3 is
Best of Both Worlds.
The Best of Both Worlds, which is
I think most people would say that arc is the highlight of TNG.
Yeah, I think it might be tied with All Good Things, which
maybe that's a little bit inside baseball, though, right?
Well, it's true. So it depends on who you ask, but...
I feel like I could sit a total stranger down and show them Best of Both Worlds. And then even maybe as like a sorbet dessert, the one after that, where he's on the farm.
Right.
I think I'm going to blank on the name. Oh. But, the ship gets all beaten up by the Borg, and then they're stuck in dry dock.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes and hangs out with his brother.
And they have that fight in the...
Yeah, they have an awkward fight in the... Yeah.
An old man fight.
Yeah, I know. It's so good. So there's a lot to be said about the season. And I think they really started... I think they found their footing and they started picking up steam.
And this episode, Who Watches the Watchers, is an early season 3. So this is episode 4 of season 3 for those keeping track at home, which I assume... is everybody, because you're listening to this podcast. Right. And so this is the one where they wrestle with the Prime Directive and basically ignore it.
Yeah.
That's their resolution, is let's not worry about it.
to be fair, it's not Picard's call, right? It's Crusher.
It's true. He doesn't...
Well, It's almost fate.
Yes, they are victims of their own circumstance. Although, to be fair to the Mentakans. It is the Federation's fault that this all happened. So,
oh yes,
yeah. We cannot, or at least Starfleet. I can't remember if they're Starfleet or Federation people, but it doesn't matter. But anyway, why don't we just jump right into this episode, which is so we start with they are en route to the Enterprise is en route to this planet because this observation post has had some trouble with its power plant. And I don't usually notice the music in Star Trek episodes, but the music that starts this off and that kind of flows throughout the episode is very sinister sounding to me, at least. And I liked it, but it just seemed weird for the opening first couple of minutes where it was like super sinister, but nothing sinister was going on.
Yeah, I liked it kind of because it basically they're like, oh man, the generator's on the fritz.
Yes.
And they're like, okay, we're on our way. Warp factor 1/2, whatever.
That was my other question. So yeah, they're talking to these people who are on this planet observing the Mentaks or whatever the hell
they're called.
Mentaks, that's from Dune.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about Dune? I've got like 8 hours of things I could talk about with Dune.
That's a different podcast. But my only thing about Dune is stop with the first book.
Yes. Pretty much agree.
That's about it. and so they're observing these, I guess, sociologists or whatever are observing these anthropologists, serving these aliens, and they have a duck blind kind of situation where they have a hidden place that they're hanging out at, but their generator is down. So the Enterprise is sauntering its way to this planet because apparently it's on the fritz, like Guy said, but it's not so bad, I guess, so they don't need to hurry. I don't understand.
Yeah, they didn't seem to be in it. I mean, I forget. I think somebody even calls out the timeline. Like, we'll be there in like 8 hours or something.
Yes. And then my question. Well, I have a question after I. So then they get a phone call, not a phone call, but a hail from the scientists, and they're like, "Oh no, our things have gone from bad to worse, Picard. Yeah. Our generator's busted, and we're on battery." And Picard's like, "Well, how long is your battery going to last?" And he says, "Oh, I don't know, a couple hours." And so Picard's like, "Okay. Let's go to warp factor 7 or something." Yeah. And that'll get them there in like half an hour. And so that sounds fine. And then all of a sudden, big explosion, and people are thrown everywhere because the generator, I guess, overloads or something. And one scientist is flung out of the duck blind, as it were, in a very strange...
very Star Trek leap.
Yes. He kind of just... oozes down the rock face and disappears from sight, basically. And all the other scientists are knocked out. And Picard is like, warp factor 9. Well, actually, they beam down and the whole outpost is like writhing with like electricity.
Again, it's technical hand-waving. If you haven't seen the episode recently, it looks like the kind of lightning that Star Wars Emperor Palpatine would be
like throwing out. Lightning.
It's like this kind of weird force lightning blue.
And I thought
it's like not CG. It's like pretty hand animated kind of thing.
Yes,
but the entire all of the surfaces appear to be electrified, which would be my number one concern if I just beam down into place. It'd be like, stop this. Make like just shut this off because we're all gonna die.
Right. But none of them seem too concerned about it.
No. They're standing around with their tricorders open, being like, "Hey, look at this. This looks like a hostile environment."
Yeah, things are not working, I guess. So yeah, I thought that was very odd. But then Dr. Crusher sees somebody, and so they beam him up. And then the generator fails. And then we cut to the generator fails, and then so this outpost is in like the side of a rock face, and it has a holographic wall, basically, so they can, I guess, look through and creepily spy on these aliens. And with the generators offline, the hologram
fails
exactly.
Or disappears, and so you can see in like basically into the duck blind. And who happens to be there? Ray Wise.
Ray Wise, yes, and his daughter. So what is it, Liko and OG, I guess?
Yeah, it's OG because at the time, that I don't think that really meant anything, but just having Ray Wise say OG all the time is pretty awesome.
And so OG is apparently she has been elected to check the sundial, so she's very excited about it. So she takes her father to go check it out. He's kind of grumbling because they're earlier than they need to be. And on their way, they're at the sundial. OG notices a flashing light where there were no flashing lights before. And she's like, what the heck is that? And her father's like, I don't know, let's go check it out.
Did you take that to be sunlight glinting off the metal stuff? Or, like, for whatever reason, when your super secret camouflage fails, like a giant flashing light goes off?
Well, that was the alarm like to let them know that their hologram has failed. It's a giant strobe light. Yeah, I took it to be that sun was glinting off of something, although that's some powerful glinting.
Yeah.
Because in the episode, it's like, it happens regularly and it's really bright.
Yeah. Anyway, hand wavy in order to get Ray Wise.
This is just a plot point so we can get them to, we'll get him, Ray Wise, Liko, to, so he climbs up because he wants to see what the heck is going on. He climbs up the rock. He sees that there's a window there, so he peeks in. And for seemingly like 10 minutes, he watches as, our favorite crew members are looking around, and no one notices him. And he sees Dr. Crusher beam up to the Enterprise. And I should point out that this is a culture, I wouldn't say primitive, but they're living in huts. They don't have space travel. They're
so. This is a point I wanted to get into because this makes no sense. They're proto Romulans.
They are. Mm-hmm.
They clearly don't have space flight.
Nope.
What?
Well, they do mention
like so the Romulans and the Vulcans are the same. I mean, not in TNG, they changed to their makeup for whatever reason, but they're from the same.
They branch. They're
original
from the same,
homeland, right?
Homeland tree.
So they must have split after spaceflight.
Yes,
I guess
because the Romulans were like, "Peace out. We reject logic. We are passionate. We're going to embrace our emotions, and so we're going to leave."
Yeah, so that's what I thought. At least that's what was outlined in the previous stuff. So who are these guys?
That is a good question.
How do they get there? What does this mean? I don't...
They never...
The only in-universe explanation I can think of is that we've seen so many random planets with perfectly human-looking people, including Nazis and gangsters. whatever. Maybe it's not that weird. Just go with it. They're Romulans. The out-of-universe explanation to me would be, well, we've got all of this makeup for Romulans, so let's just do that.
I think that might be, you know, cost-saving measures are always welcome in Star Trek.
Because it's always kind of bugged me because it's been kind of an insightful... I like the idea of doing anthropology on a group that are going to grow up with it, that are an earlier representation of one of the current powers, right? Like, if you could go and do observation of, like, I don't know, you know, America during the Revolution or Victorian England or something, wouldn't that be kind of cool?
It would be.
So I get the idea, but there's just nothing ever makes sense. Like, I don't understand how these people get there.
So Liko, he's checking out what they're doing in the duck blind. Data notices him, although you would think Data would notice him before, but whatever. And he says, Riker, look, there's a dude watching us. And Riker looks over, and sure enough, there is a dude watching them. And so Liko is surprised, and he rests his hand on part of the duck blind, which has, as previously discussed, electricity is coursing through everything, and it knocks him out, and he gets thrown away down to seemingly his death, but he's just unconscious. And then Dr. Crusher runs out and gets him.
It's really like you expect... I think if the show wasn't trying to take this scene seriously, there'd be a look of like, saw that coming, because of all the blue energy flying around.
It does seem like, you know, it wouldn't pass with OSHA or something. This is not a safe working environment.
Right. Anyway, so Crusher runs down to perform emergency...
Medicine on him.
Yeah.
And she decides, oh boy, he's we better beam him up to sickbay. Which makes sense, right? So she beams him up to sickbay. But what she doesn't know is that his daughter was hidden and watching what was going on. So she saw her father and this strange woman get beamed into nothingness, which I would think is surprising.
You know what? If you and I were taking a hike and we saw somebody beam out, we would be totally freaked out. We'd be like, wow, that's some Star Trek stuff. But that is like, disappearing people is a weird thing.
Yes. She like, takes it. She handles it pretty well.
Yeah. I would be like, I would just go find a cave and hide. Like,
and just cry.
Well, how do you know it's not death, really?
It's like, true. They could have just disintegrated. I don't know. Yeah. But his daughter seems pretty okay with it because he doesn't die. Spoiler alert. Yeah. They beam onto sickbay. And they beam up the other injured scientists as well. Dr. Crusher is busy helping everybody. Captain Picard shows up and he's like, "What the hell, Beverly? Why did you bring this guy up? You've broken the Prime Directive." And she says, "Well, you know, it was our fault, and it was either bring him up or let him die." Mm-hmm. And Captain Picard says, "Why didn't you let him die?"
So I liked a bit of this. I liked this scene because Crusher was doing the old Bones bit.
Mm-hmm.
And Picard was kind of doing a half Kirk, half maybe three-quarters Spock bit, right?
It's true.
Like, where Bones would always just be like, "No, screw it. I'm saving a life. I honestly don't care." Which, sitting on the edge of forever, it hinges upon that entire thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Spock and Kirk would feel a greater responsibility to the Prime Directive.
I'm not sure Kirk would feel that greater responsibility.
No, he actually kind of flies in the face of that kind of stuff.
He would be like, "Yeah, their culture's dumb anyway." So,
pretty much it.
Let's. Yeah, that's true. No worries.
That's true. But Picard, I like his stance on this. Like, he's just like.
Well, he is like the only character who really believes that the Prime Directive is important in this episode.
Right. Yeah.
And he really
believes it too.
He does. He is 100% sold on the Prime Directive. He's like, "This guy should have died. You messed it up. We've already messed up enough. Beverly, what are you thinking?" And so he's like, "Well, the course is clear now. We'll just have to wipe his memories." But you don't want to wipe your memory of this sponsor from someone who I think you'll be familiar with. He defeated the Klingons. He suffered the wrath of Khan. And he commanded the bridge of the Starship Enterprise. But for his next mission, Captain Kirk wants you to be a member of his crew. William Shatner has just launched his very first Kickstarter project to create his new book, Catch Me Up. And you can be a special part of this project by going to Kickstarter now and becoming a backer. Catch Me Up seeks to empower 1 million people to try new things, accept new challenges, and catch up with the latest technology. He's launched this project on Kickstarter so you, his friends, I like to think I'm his personal friend, can be part of this important mission. So go to Kickstarter.com, type in Catch Me Up, or go to catchmeup.com, and choose from rewards like autographed copies of the book, t-shirts, and even the opportunity to spend an evening with the captain himself. It's Catch Me Up, the new book by William Shatner, available only at Kickstarter.com. Thank you to William Shatner for sponsoring Random Trek. And now, back to the episode where we left Ray Wise, unconscious, in sickbay. But now he's waking up, and so he sees Captain Picard and Crusher talking, and he's very confused by what's going on. And then Captain Picard's like, he's awake. And Beverly Crusher's like, "Damn it!" And knocks him out again. And then Picard's like, "Well, now we really have to wipe his memory." And then he leaves sickbay. Dr. Crusher, not so excited, it seems, but she does say it may not work because their brains are very different than ours.
Yeah, which you can take as an explanation for why the sedation didn't hold.
Exactly. They have different physiology, so yeah. She didn't know how much to dose him with, I guess.
Close enough. I mean, whatever, they look identical to Romulans, but what do I know? I'm going to stay out of Star Trek medical theory.
You're no space doctor.
Exactly.
And so they wipe his memory, they don't show that procedure, and then they beam him down to the planet, and he's laying on the ground, he wakes up, he's groggy, and his daughter comes out and finds him. Well, he yells her name, and she comes along and finds him, which led me to wonder, how long was he on the Enterprise, and was she just kind of waiting there? I don't know.
Well, maybe that makes sense, because like I said, you and I would probably just cower behind a rock.
Well, that's true. She might have been kind of had, like, in shell shock or something.
Yeah.
Liko wakes up, and he is apparently now super religious, because he thinks, oh my God.
Yeah. So here's the point. Maybe I'll come back to this at the end. Yeah, it's religious, but I think it's more superstitious than religious.
Well, that's true. And they did reject this superstition as we'll find out later in the
episode. Yeah, because there's no doctrine, right? And I define a religion as having a doctrine. And he's just literally making stuff up as he goes along.
He does. He makes up a lot of stuff about what the Picard, as he calls it, wants. Because apparently the Mentakians had this legend of the Overseer, I guess, who has lots of power and does stuff and looks after them, I guess.
And which given, totally understand. It's like the most generic version of God that you could.
Yep. All cultures have like a creation and mythology.
And Overseer's just good name, isn't it? Like,
why not?
I was fine with it. I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it too. And so he assumes, in order to make sense of these weird things that are happening, you know, like Arthur C. Clarke said, any is, you know, advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Sufficiently advanced technology
indistinguishable from magic.
Exactly, that's it.
He had lost his wife in the floods earlier year.
That's right.
So he may already be prone to be like, am I getting punished? Or
yes, he's like, in a tender spot in his life.
Yes,
and he's looking for explanations about why his wife died, and now why he, you know, sees these weird people and shows up someplace, and he seemingly thought he was dead, but they revived him. He's got a lot going on in his head.
Yeah.
And so he goes back to his little hut people, his village, I guess is probably a better way of saying it, and tells everybody very excitedly about the Picard and the Overseer and what happened to him, and he died and he was resurrected, and they need to, you know, start worshiping this guy. And everyone's like, well, that sounds kind of crazy.
Yeah. I forget the village leader's name, but she has a very, like, pretty logical take on it. Like, we're not just going to arbitrarily start doing crazy stuff to people
just because
you've had a vision, like,
right? Yeah. But then they find Palmer, who's the scientist who was like forcibly ejected from the duck blind there, walking around, and they bring him back to the hut. And everyone's like, "Oh my God, you were right! This weird guy proves that the Picard exists." And so Riker and Troy have to beam down to the planet. I may have gotten that timeline mixed up, but it's
it's close enough.
Who's paying attention? Riker and Troy beam down in disguise to see what's going on and ascertain how much damage they have done.
Yeah. Actually, I think they're there when they drag in the scientist guy.
Oh, right. Yeah, they're there and they witness it.
Yeah, because they're like Ray Wise is like, we should put this guy to death, whatever. He proposes a course of action. The village leader says, whoa, let's not get hasty. And Troy and Riker in Romulan dress, or Romulan makeup, at least Mentakin makeup, are arguing like, yeah, you, like, they're basically just trying to dispel any of the spirituality stuff. Like, oh, I saw a dream and my daughter had the same dream. Oh, well, maybe your father and daughter, so maybe you're just, your dreams are linked. Which
sense.
Is like, it's kind of funny because it is as goofy as the Overseer, except the Overseer is actually, there is actually a super powerful dude up there.
That's true. That there is, blow up the Picard planet. Exists.
Yeah. And so what I loved about the village leader was like, she's like, well, that makes just as much sense as, like, nothing. None of this is logical.
Exactly.
None
of you people are making any sense.
Yeah.
And I do like when they beam down, Riker and Troy have this nice little moment where they laugh at each other's garb, which I liked. That was a nice little
moment. Yeah, and they talk about the society and how it's a matriarchal society.
Yep, and Riker is intrigued by the possibilities of what that could entail. Oh, Riker.
Yeah.
And they
they Kirk him up a little too much.
They do.
In general. But, I mean, whatever. It's a fun line.
And instead, in the grand tradition of Star Trek characters going undercover, Riker and Troy give their real names, which I guess in this situation doesn't really matter because nobody knows who they are. But it's always
amusing. I had never thought of that.
Yeah, in Errand of Mercy, Spock gives his real name to Klingons. And you're like, Spock, really? You're right. Pretending to be a merchant, but you call yourself Spock.
Right.
Doesn't make any sense. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Yeah. So they capture Palmer. Ray Wise is like, let's kill him so that we can appease the Picard. And Troy and Riker are like, yeah, maybe not. And then they have to figure out a way to beam Palmer up.
Yeah, things go south. It looks like, oh, does a storm roll in? Something happens where it's like, it looks like Palmer is just going to get murdered to appease the Bacchanalic. And yes, so they decide it's like, we need to intervene.
Yes. And so the chief scientist is like, well, just beam him up, Picard. We've already contaminated the planet. It doesn't matter. Beam him up or he'll die. And Picard's like, no, we need to get him alone. And then we'll beam him up because we must mitigate the damage we have done. Troy and Riker come up with this plan, which is basically, look that way. And then they steal it.
I love it when he's got him over his shoulder and he's just running like down the steps.
Which makes no sense. So the plan is Troy says, oh, hey, I saw another one of these guys over the ridge. And so they say, okay, everybody, let's all leave together and we'll leave this one old man to tie up Palmer. And we'll all go run and check out this thing that this person we've never met before tells us is somewhere over there.
Yeah.
And then Riker stays back.
I did find them kind of adorably trusting.
They were very naive people. Yeah. Riker stays back, and he basically ties up the old man and picks up Palmer and runs out with him. My question, though, is why didn't he just pick up Palmer, move to a different room in the hut, and beam up from there? Well, so no one would have seen him.
Could have blindfolded the guy.
He also could have.
Literally do not need to run with this guy anywhere ever. Like you,
but he
fine.
Does. Riker decides I'm going to pick him up in a fireman's carry and run all over the place
with a guy with a bow and arrow chasing him.
Yes,
which is kind of awesome. I did love those scenes, and we see the rocks like the classic Star Trek.
Yep,
I forget what they're called. Maybe
I forget
California.
Too. They're in somewhere outside of LA. They may be naive, but they're not stupid, and they quickly see that Riker is stealing away Palmer, so they run after – well, they send one guy after him with a bow and arrow, and this is when Riker's plan of picking up Palmer and running with him seems like it wasn't the greatest plan in the world, but it all works out. Riker finds like this little alcove that he hides in, and he sticks Palmer in. There are a lot of problems. Palmer is severely injured. You're not supposed to be moving them around, but
it's dumb. But whatever, we got an action sequence out of it.
There was an action sequence. Because
this, I think you could have written this episode to be very ponderous and like talkie based, like an Aaron Sorkin episode kind of thing. You know,
it's true.
But you know, we get a couple of action sequences.
They need to punch it up a little bit. Yeah. And so they beam up. Palmer's fine. Riker's fine. But sadly, Troy is left behind. And so the other aliens are like, well, we're not going to trust Troy. So they all go into their hut and they're trying to figure out what's going on.
And to be fair, one of the most logical moves yet, it's like, let's just restrain Troy because
she's new and she's with that guy who just stole the other one and tied up this old man. Which makes sense. Makes perfect sense. And so Picard's like, ugh, this is not going well. Yeah. And this is when the storm rolls in, and they're like, let's sacrifice Ray Wise. It's like, well, clearly, we need to sacrifice Troy to appease the Picard, because I have just made that up. It makes sense.
Nice. That's why I say it's superstition rather than like a religion.
Yes, but this is the spark. This could have started a religion on this planet.
Yes.
If they didn't nip it in the bud, I think.
Yes. And it would be kill strangers if there's bad weather. Probably a poor precedent. But
It would have a negative impact on commerce, I think.
A little bit,
So Picard's like, oh, we need to do something. So let's beam up the leader, who seems pretty logical, and I'll just show her that I'm just a dude in a big intergalactic or interstellar hut, and she'll understand.
He's rolling the dice here, but he has high hopes, and he honestly expects it to work.
He does.
Because he literally thinks he can beam up effectively like a hut-dwelling person, stick them into outer space, and he thinks that, like, because he knows it's all good, he can just explain to them that, no, like, it's just technology. Don't worry about it.
Right. You'll get to it at some point. And he goes, there's a good scene, so they beam her up.
Great scene.
There's
Loved
a great scene
it.
Where he's like, you know, you haven't always lived in huts, have you? And he tries to show their advancement and how his people once lived in huts and they've just been, you know, have advanced a lot more than these people and they're all the same and he's just a man. And it seems like she's getting it because she's smart and logical.
Yeah.
She's like, well, I understand everything you're telling me, Picard, and I really appreciate it. Maybe if you could, you know, do something for us that would help us. And
Picard's I love this bit, too.
Sure, you know, we could do something for you. And she's like, well, there was these storms, and six of my people died last year. If you could bring them back to life, that'd be great.
which I loved. And I thought that was so great because if you were at like the bow and arrow level of technology, mm-hmm. and you got beamed into space and saw all of these marvelous and wonderful things, why would bringing somebody back from the dead not be something that was within your power?
It's
not unreasonable to it's totally reasonable to be like, look, I understand that you're not a god and that you came up like we did. That said, can you bring back our dead?
That's right.
Like, it's not a crazy...
You've got a pretty nice hut here.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a totally crazy stretch, right?
No, I think it makes perfect sense. And that, you could see, you know, Patrick Stewart is such a great actor.
Oh,
and
God, yeah.
You can see how he's like, ugh. Yeah. He's
and Christopher. In fairness, and I don't know, I can't remember her name, but the actress he was playing against was...
Oh, she's very good, too, in this.
Yeah.
She does a great job. And he's like, ugh, you didn't get what I was telling you.
Yeah.
We haven't conquered death. I can't bring back your people. That's beyond my power. And luckily, I was watching this episode with my wife, and my wife was like, well, this is really convenient. Someone's dying in sickbay. So he's like, oh, let's go to
sickbay. Somebody without a name that we don't have to feel bad for.
Yes.
Just, okay, let's go illustrate death.
Yeah, let's come on to sickbay. We'll watch this woman die and to prove to you.
Because I think, if I'm not wrong, during that talk where he's talking about death in his ready room, the phone, like the call comes in, his little badge phone rings,
mm-hmm.
and he answers it with his iWatch, and
you think he
they're like, hey,
it.
Somebody's dying, and which is the most convenient time ever.
Yep, like and he's like, oh, great. Is it anyone I care
not
about?
Not outwardly, but you can feel the writers being like, phew. Glad this one all timed out well.
This is how we do it. And so, yep, they go quickly to sickbay. They watch Dr. Crusher, which in a good scene. I think this may be...
It's good. It is good.
Not that I know who this the character is who's dying, but it's a very touching kind of scene where they show her dying just of her natural cause or whatever, her injuries.
Yeah.
And that proves to the leader that, yes, Picard may have lots of technology and these people may be greatly advanced, but they have not conquered death.
I think they did a good... Or I don't know if it's in the script or a directorial choice, is that they had quite a few people in their room.
Yes.
They had not just Crusher and the patient. They had Crusher, like at least one or two other like orderlies and, you know, and everybody was kind of bummed out.
Yeah, and the leader, the scientist leader guy was very sad too.
Yes, because it wasn't just Picard and this person dying and Picard being kind of like...
Eh?
Because I don't think that would have...
Yeah, that would have
sold
been weird
the message like, as much, right? It was like a palpable... There was a palpable sadness in that room mm-hmm. that they'd lost this person.
Yes. It wasn't like, oh, let's just go into this private cubicle and watch someone die just to prove the point. Or he could have... One imagines he could have just walked into the bridge and taken a phaser and shot somebody to also illustrate the point. But he didn't do that.
Well, it is the Prime Directive. I wonder where murdering crew members comes. Like,
well, it's right
is that number two?
It could be number two.
That's like one of those classic Asimov robot rule things where
that's right.
These don't work out like you think they do.
Surprise! And so she's like, oh boy, you guys can't conquer death. Let's go beam down before Ray Wise goes crazy. And so they beam down with Picard. Well, actually, Ray Wise is like, we need to kill Troy. They cut to her to this scene. If only the Picard would send a sign and we would maybe not kill
it.
Troy. And then Captain Picard materializes, and he's like, hey, don't kill her.
to be fair, he materializes out of sight.
That's true.
Which I like the touch of. But I can't help but note every time I watch this episode that – and I find it interesting because there's almost like a hidden intent here from the writers at least that like Ray Wise, whose name we've already forgotten, but Ray Wise calls out for a sign from God. And it is delivered in the form of his god, Picard, literally walking around the corner.
True. And that should be like, oh, I was right.
Like, he wanted to see God, and God literally appeared to him.
It's pretty good.
It's
and he's like, hands off, Troy. And by the way, Ray Wise, I'm not a god. I'm just a dude. So, you know, cut it out. And Ray Wise is very confused, and he has this bow, and he's like, well, I'm just going to shoot you with an arrow to prove that you are, in fact, a god, because I think you're trying to trick me. This must be another one of your tests, Picard.
By the way, Ray Wise believes in really shit gods. Like, these are not... I don't know if you have to edit that, but these are not friendly gods.
No, they're not. But you take the gods that you get, not the gods that you want.
Nice.
And so the leader is like, no, don't, and tries to shield Picard. Picard's like, listen, and he moves her aside and he says, if this is what it's going to take for Ray Wise to believe I'm not a god, then let him shoot. And you have to think, in the back of Picard's head, he was thinking, he's not going to shoot me. But he does, in fact. So he shoots Picard. Picard, obviously not a god. And it's like, oh no, what have I done? And then Picard gets fixed up. And he says, Dr. Crusher has repaired my injury with her usual skill, which sounded a little sarcastic to me when he's the way he said it.
Yeah, a little bit. That's funny. I hadn't even thought of that. Yeah. But you know what? He is in a sling.
He is.
Which was a nice touch, because given Star Trek-y kind of medicine, you'd think maybe they'd just fix that up and it would be. Because in other episodes, we see people come in with broken bones and she like waves her magic wand and she's right, like,
and it's fine.
Don't be doing the Batleth competition this week. And then that's it. But, you know, I like the touch of the sling, and I think it was an essential writing or directorial choice to show that, no, there is lasting damage done.
He is not a god.
He's a corporeal being. Yeah.
And so he beams down and for some reason shows the aliens, the duck blind, and explains it to them. Not quite sure why he does that, but he does. And he says,
I don't know. Here's the thing. He also says, we're going to keep doing it.
Right. So just pretend.
Which is like, I would be like, I don't know about that, dude.
This is
kind of creepy.
Tainted the scientific experiment here anyway, because they
know it would
be
like if your new neighbor moved in, managed to run your dog over, and be like, look, I'm really sorry about that, but guess what? In the future, I'm going to be looking at you through this window all the time just to make sure that your next dog doesn't get run over. Like, right. It's weird. They should be retreating at that point, right? Like, being like,
yeah, they should shut
really
it down.
Sorry. Yeah, we're out of here.
Pretend none of this has ever happened.
Well, I mean, the hilarious thing is, it's like, I don't know why they weren't doing this from orbit in the first place.
Well, that was my other one. Like, they don't need this thing. I was thinking, well, if they need to be on the planet, why don't they just, like, bury it underground and then just have little monitors that no one will ever see?
Whatever. Put, like, a tiny little itty-bitty ship in orbit and then beam down when you need to and then beam back up when you're done.
Yeah, Starfleet makes a lot of bad decisions.
A lot of boneheaded, yeah.
And
I think, yeah, you and me for the Admiralty.
That's right. I think so. Vote McNulty English for Admiralty. At the end, Picard's like, yeah, we're going to keep watching you. You know, we were once you, so we want to, you know, see your development. Everything's good. Ray Wise is okay. He's back in with everybody.
I think he has a line that's like, I was such a dummy.
Basically, I was so foolish. And then the leader's like, Captain Picard, never forget us. And Captain Picard's like, I won't. And that's the end of it.
And then we never see them again.
So overall, Guy, what did you think of this episode?
I love this episode. It's one of my favorites. When it came up on the random roll, and I swear to God, this is actually a random roll.
It totally is. I randomly assigned this. I didn't know what we were going to watch. And I was pleased when it came up because I've always liked this episode as well.
Yeah, I was happy. I'd seen it a lot. I think, I don't know, I mean, like everybody, I rewatch TNG once a year.
Mm-hmm. As you do.
No, I don't know how often I rewatch it, but I've seen it a lot, right? And some episodes I will skip.
Well.
This is very, yeah, right, this is one that I never skip. I like it. It's good. I like the Troy Riker banter. Mm-hmm. I love that they give Patrick Stewart a little bit of room to breathe with his speech on higher-minded thinking, mm-hmm. which I think he excels at, and I don't think any other cast member could really pull off. And it's kind of it's a bit of a touchstone for Star Trek, right?
It's true,
and he nailed it. I like the Mentakans.
Even though they're Romulans,
that amuses me. That's like one of my weird little that's a bummer. But in general, I really like this episode.
Well, Guy, thank you for being on this episode of Random Trek.
Thanks, man. I'm going to force my way on to the next episode, too.
I appreciate you being on, and that was a lot of fun.
No, yeah, it was a blast. Thank you very much.
On the next Random Trek, The Mark of Gideon from the original series.